Support comes from the Wiregrass Archives at Troy University's Dothan campus, identifying and preserving historical documents and photographs for research related to the Wiregrass region. More information at troy.edu/wiregrassarchives.
From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. There's a podcast called Dope for Lime, which is the old-fashioned name for Coca-Cola, whose sweetness is cut by lime juice. That same phrase is the name of a podcast that honors the late writer Lillian E. Smith, who was active in the early civil rights movement. Today we visit by Skype with Matthew Touch, director of the Lillian E. Smith Center, an educational center and artist retreat managed by Piedmont University in Clayton, Georgia. Originally begun by the Smith family as the Laurel Falls Camp for Girls, the camp operated in the North Georgia mountains from 1920 to 1948. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us from the North Georgia mountains.
Thank you for having me.
As director of the Lillian E. Smith Center at Piedmont University in Northeast Georgia, you are host producer of a special podcast about a special woman. How did all of this come about?
So the Lillian Smith Center came about. Piedmont University started the center in around 2014, 2015. Before Piedmont University got involved, it was actually part of Lillian Smith's family. Her niece, Nancy Smith Fichter, and Nancy Smith Fichter's husband, Robert Fichter, were from Tallahassee, Florida. Nancy taught modern dance at Florida State University and brought the modern dance program to Florida State. And they had the property as an artist retreat. And it's the property where Lillian Smith used to live and worked, and where she actually ran Laurel Falls Camp for Girls from 1925 through 1948. And then Piedmont University took over the property and maintained it as an artist and scholar retreat, a science research area, and as a social justice educational center, too, for educators, P-12 educators, university educators.
How did the podcast get started?
The podcast started and came out of Dope with Lime, which was the editorial that Lillian wrote in the journal that her and her partner, Paula Snelling, published. And that was the name of the editorial. So the title came from that. And the podcast includes excerpts from Lillian Smith's work, her interviews with scholars and artists and former residents, all talking about Lillian Smith and her influence.
So Lillian Smith was considered sort of a social activist in the 1940s, right ahead of the civil rights movement itself. Did she have a connection with Martin Luther King Jr.?
She did. And one of the things I always say is, upon her death in 1966, Martin Luther King Jr. wrote to her family, and this is what he said to her family. Her writings, her exemplary life, and her commitment to people and humanity inspired millions. She was one of the brightest stars in the human firmament. Probably no Southerner seared the conscience of white Southerners on the question of racial injustice than Lillian Smith. And the other two big things about her connection with King is she wrote to him in 56 with the Montgomery bus boycott. And they started a connection. And one of the things that's really fascinating is King said in his reply to Lillian that, "I've read your work for years, and I'm glad to finally meet you in person." And then she and King gave speeches at the first annual Institute on Nonviolence and Social Change in Montgomery in 56, which was the one-year anniversary of the bus boycotts. And those speeches were reprinted and published in Fine Line in the New York Times as a pamphlet. She was also very much connected with King with the Atlanta sit-ins. One of the things that I found out was right before the Atlanta sit-ins, she gave a keynote speech at a SNCC conference 3 days before the sit-ins. So she was connected with all of this, with the movement and with King.
You mentioned Dope with Lime. This was a column that Lillian E. Smith wrote in a literary journal. What did that term mean?
So Dope with Lime was basically when Coke was a lot sweeter, you would cut the sweetness with lime. So Dope was a reference for Coca-Cola.
In listening to the Dope with Lime podcast, there's a story that's true about Christmas.
Yeah, so Memory of a Large Christmas was a book she published in 1962, just recollecting growing up in a big family in Jasper, Florida, and the Christmases she had there, and then her family moving to Clayton, Georgia. One of the stories that she tells in there is about her father, who during Christmas, there was incarcerated men, black and white men, and they were working on the road in Clayton, the highway, and they were sleeping in boxcars, and he went down and talked to the guards and asked them if they could have them up to the house for Christmas. So all of the 40-something incarcerated men came to the Smith family house for Christmas and ate. And Calvin Smith, who was Lillian's dad, interacted with them, asked them who they were, learned about them. And then when they left, they were sitting there, Lillian and her family and her dad, talking. And one of the things that Lillian's dad said to her is, "We've committed sins. Hopefully you won't do this, that you will move forward." But he also said that times are going to change. Are you willing to change with them? I had a former camper from Laurel Falls Camp tell me that when she was like 6 or 7 years old, she went to the camp and she was a Callaway from West Georgia. And Lillian told her the exact same thing. She asked her, "Are you willing to change? Times are going to change. Are you willing to change with them?"
And apparently her father was sort of a progressive man himself. But here's the quote he said, "Never look down on a man. Look him in the eyes."
I love that quote because she says, "Never look down on the man, look him in the eye. If you can't, there's something wrong with you," is the rest of that quote too. But I don't think she viewed her dad or her mom as very progressive, because one of the things she says is that, you know, they taught me about Christianity and Jesus Christ, but they didn't live that way, basically. One of the things she says about her dad is he owned mills in Florida and he had black workers and white workers. He treated both of them negatively. He had a black church, a white church. He had a commissary store. She says one of his proudest moments was beating the devil because paying the workers to vote for prohibition. So I think that he was progressive, but I also think that she saw that there were things that Calvin and Anne, her parents, taught her that they weren't adhering to, and she was really questioning those. There's a story with this girl that she talks about that. I speculate what would have happened to Lillian's views if she lived past 1966, right? If she saw 1968 and beyond. How would her views have changed?
Let me ask you about the camps, Laurel Falls Camp for Girls in Rabun County, Georgia. Did she write at the camp? Are there any records that came from that?
Her dad started the camp in 1920. It was the first private camp in Georgia for girls. It wasn't integrated. She took it over in 1925. She came back from China. She was in China for 3 years and took it over, and she bought the camp from her parents in 28. She ran the camp till about 48. So after Strange Fruit came out in 1944. During that time, the camp is a very formative moment for her. She did have Jewish campers there, which I think is very important. But around 1935 or 36, her partner, Paula Snelling, had a really bad horse accident and she almost died. Her mom's health was going down. I think another camper committed suicide. Her and Paula started a literary journal about 36. And that literary journal ran from 36 through 45. And all of those are digitized. And in that journal, they were the first journal to pay Polly Murray for one of her poems. They had a piece by W.E.B. Du Bois in it, by W.J. Cash, all of these huge luminaries. And I think that that period, she learned a lot from the people who were writing to her. The other things, too, that we found when I was digging through the camp, we actually found recordings of the camp, the campers performing plays, performing songs. There's actually records of her and Paula during their Rosenwald Fund years, and there's a recording from Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama, of songs that people were performing there when they were going around during their Rosenwald Fund travels through the South.
Well, Matthew, this has been an interesting story about a 20th century writer and her connection to a camp and to a podcast, Dope with Lime. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us by Skype was Matthew Touch, director of the Lillian E. Smith Center, managed by Piedmont University in Clayton, Georgia. More information can be found at the Piedmont University website and on the Dope for Lime podcast. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is itself a podcast on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.